In the past month or so on Food for Thought, I've told you about a Vancouver couple who ate nothing but locally produced foods in their 100-mile diet. I also reported from Crete, where people there can get most of their daily foodstuffs within a 5-mile radius. That may sound ideal, but it doesn't happen in reality across most of Canada. That's why I took in a seminar called Localizing a Food System, Connecting Communities, Farmers, and Food. Jared Gunn-McQuillan and Eric Bush came to the seminar from Rainy River in northwestern Ontario. They told me Rainy River used to be very self-sufficient when it came to food production.
And along the Rainy River Valley is this essentially small little pocket of land that is actually somewhat arable. It really is the sort of breadbasket and used to provide a lot more for the area. But as sort of the industrial mindset is taken in, there's been less reliance on that for the food, and so kind of trying to get a movement back towards that.
Another important thing to mention is it wasn't until the 1930s that a highway was actually pushed through from the Rainy River District to the rest of Canada. So before the 30s, you had to leave to go to the States, so that fostered the depend on our own.
Anything coming from the east, which is where, you know, all the government would be, there wasn't access until 1965 that they built the Noden Causeway. So it was still tugboats bringing people into this town. And so this town was extremely isolated, and there still is a little bit of that sense of isolation there.
With the roads came a boom in the pulp and paper industry. People worked at those well-paying jobs. Farming declined, and with it, the local food economy. Gunn-McQuillan and Bush are working with the local health unit and agriculture federation to encourage more farming, but they've discovered even if more animals and crops are produced, there's nowhere to process them.
Right now, all that's left is an abattoir that is about 2.5 hours away in Dryden, and there is a meat processing facility that will take the carcassed animal and cut it into cuts and, you know, make sausages and things like that. But it's really trying to look at creating some more sort of community-led, community-based processing facilities that these farmers can then bring their products to. Things that have been thrown around is bringing back some of the canneries that used to be there and things like that.
While the pair acknowledges their progress is slow, some new farmers markets have opened, and a community food council and brochure are doing their part to raise awareness of the health and economic benefits of eating local. So far, it's the farmers who have stepped forward first.
And certainly from a farmer's perspective, they can see that economic gain aspect. We would like to, in the end, sell the idea of local food as all-encompassing community health issue. So we've approach the farmers who obviously have the more immediate economic gain from local food, you know, eliminating the middleman. It's not at that point yet, but we hope that we can get that across.
I think we really look at it as this, the development of this brochure is sort of the first step, right? And that's really just starting to create some awareness around this issue, right? Really actually trying to get people, starting to call, what is this all about? I saw your brochure, and really starting to create some awareness around this before we can, really start mobilizing the sort of consumer themselves.
The town of Chatham is 80 kilometers north of New York City, where a different kind of local awareness drive is underway. A group called Chatham Keep Farming is trying to make sure the town remains a farming community and supports a sustainable agriculture system. Mary Gail Beeble is the group's coordinator and says the most important resource they need to protect right now is the farmland itself.
And at least 60% of the land that is part of our farming network is leased. And it is not only leased by the people who have traditionally had long relationships and understand the economics of farming, it's leased by people from New York who are coming in and will flip that land. And so some of our farmers lease land from 30 to 40 people. And if one or two parcels in the middle are taken out of farming for whatever reason, it can shut down the entire network. So we started out by thinking that the fragile part was that these farmers are going to want to sell the farms. And we ended up by saying, well, that's certainly a possibility, but even more likely scenario is to have all the leased land go out of production.
Chatham Keep Farming has been successful at getting farmers and consumers involved in the formal planning process at local government levels and keeps plugging away at community awareness.
At one point, it was actually fairly early on in the process, maybe 7 or 8 months into the whole pilot program, and I was in our grocery store parking lot and someone asked a question. They'd seen one of the articles in the local newspaper, and they asked a question about Keep Farming and Chatham Keep Farming, and I opened up my car trunk, took out the display that was in there, and set it up in the parking lot of the grocery store and thought, oh my God, I've lost it at this point. But I mean, to me, it was a really natural thing to do, and I was so excited. I have in my car trunk right now, by the way, display materials and 3,000 brochures, and anytime I go anywhere, I drop off our current guides to agriculture. If anybody asks any question, I say, wait a minute, and I run and get it. So you just have to sort of be prepared and keep going. Opportunity comes at strange moments, I've found.
You'll find links to the Eat Local efforts in Rainy River and Chatham, New York on my website. Next week, a look at what's happening to small farms closest to Canada's densest population, the Greater Toronto Area. That's Food for Thought. I'm Don Genova.